WPFW, Washington.
I'm gonna do.
The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed ideas in the mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. One should, for example, be able to see that things are hopeless and yet be determined to make them otherwise. F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Dialogue.
Good evening. Welcome to Dialogue, the only radio show on WPFW that brings in radio hosts from three other radio shows to come in here to talk about the issues of the day. We're here every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. I'm Mark Levine, host of The Inside Scoop, and sitting with me is Terry Kester, the host of What's at Stake, and Garland Nixon, the host of The Edge. The topic today is marriage equality in D.C. And also sitting with me is the president of the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club, Jeff Richardson. Massachusetts was the first state to allow marriage equality in 2004, and after then it seems it's growing at an increasing geometric pace. We had Connecticut 2 years later, followed actually California, then Connecticut. Then in 2008, the voters in California voted to take away marriage equality. That's still up before the California Supreme Court. And then last week, it seems it's going even quicker. There was the Iowa Supreme Court for that state. The Vermont legislature voted by an astounding 2/3 in the Vermont House and 87% in the Vermont Senate to override the Republican governor's veto and allow marriage equality in that state. Also last week, fast on the heels of Iowa and Vermont, was the D.C. City Council, which voted to allow marriages in other states of gay couples to be recognized right here in the District of Columbia. So is now the time for the District of Columbia to go one step further, to have full marriage equality? New York also accepts out-of-state gay couples, but it introduced a bill the governor has to allow full marriage equality in that state. New Jersey, New Hampshire, and Maine are around the corner. Soon, in a couple of years, I expect every state northeast of New Jersey to have marriage equality. And I had the distinct privilege of being at the Gertrude Stein Democratic Club last night to facilitate a discussion led by Jeff Richardson, the president, whereby that club for the first time said that now is the time for marriage equality in D.C. Jeff Richardson, why is now the time? I assume that many in your organization have supported marriage equality for quite some time. Why is now the time?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me tonight, Mark, and it's great to be a part of the panel. I think, as you said, you know, looking at on the heels of what is happening across the country, when you look at the accomplishments that have been made in regards to, particularly when you look at a state like Iowa, you know, passing marriage equality, and then when you look at the District of Columbia, which is, you know, historically known to be very progressive leaning, and also to have one of the strongest, when you look at domestic partnership laws in the country, why not now? And when you look at the fact that we've been building over time, you look at the work that has been done, you look at the laws that have been passed on the city council, you look at even last year, the expansion of the domestic partner benefits that were passed last year, many within the community locally are saying, if not now, when? And so, you know, there's a strong outcry across the community, and we are very excited to see in the direction that we're going.
Now, Jeff, of course, D.C. has a distinct disadvantage in relation to the 50 states. Unlike the 50 states who can pass a law and it's law, Congress oversees everything that D.C. does. And sometimes when the district's elected representatives make a decision on behalf of the people of D.C., Congress steps in and overturns it. Are you afraid of that this time?
Well, I think there is some concern about that, and I think that's why you saw with the vote of the city council in regards to recognizing marriages from other jurisdictions. In many ways, you know, it's sort of test ground. We shall see if there even is congressional involvement and how Congress responds to the district moving forward with this legislation. But I think that also one of the things that we have to realize in the district, and we see it now, I think with the voting rights legislation, at any point in time, Congress can intervene. And I think at some point in time, residents of the District of Columbia, and I think we're starting to realize it, we have to stand up and say we want self-determination, whether it's voting rights in the, whether it's voting rights, you know, whether it's when we talk about budget autonomy or whether it's marriage equality. And so no matter what the issue is, Congress can intervene. And so I think that, you know, this is just one another issue. And I think that we as a community have to stand up for self-determination in, here in the district.
Garland, let me ask you, do you think now is the time?
Well, I guess it'll be determined. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, it certainly appears as though that's what's happening. That's what's going on now, and that America is ready for that. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't see a major problem with
it. Are the people in the district ready for it? I mean, America's one thing. I mean, the Mississippians are not ready.
Iowans.
People from Vermont are ready. Well, what about people in the district?
I think definitely people in the district in all likelihood are, because it is generally progressive leaning. I did have one question I want to throw out there, because I was talking with someone today about this issue, and they said, and this was like kind of thrown in my direction. And I thought, well, that's something I might want. This is something I want to ask you about, and that is this. What we were discussing today was the issue of gay marriage. One issue being the, of course, all of the legal restrictions of two people not being able to be married. You know, the things that you can't get, everything from what's left behind to hospital, the whole nine yards, the legal aspects, the technical, administrative, legal aspects, number one, versus the societal, social issue of marriage. Okay, so then the question is there, why would there be a, what is the advantage of saying, I'm trying to find a way to word this in the way that it was given me, that the discussion was, and basically the two things. Let's say the district said, look, every single thing that you get legally and administratively, if you're married, is awarded as a civil union or whatever you call it, as opposed to the actual term marriage. What is the difference, and why go towards marriage?
Great question.
As a term, as a word.
This is a great question. I think many people ask that. You know, in the District of Columbia, we are very close. When you look at what's covered under what's off under domestic partner benefits, we are very close. I think the big thing about it, this is a human rights issue. Mm-hmm. It's a true equality issue, and I think it's an issue of separate but equal, in the sense that, you know, we can't say, taking the stance and saying that, you know, one particular relationship, you know, same-gendered relationship is as equal, you know, as other relationships, and that they have an equal stake in our society and should be granted equal rights. I do think that, I mean, in many ways, it is a philosophical issue.
Yes.
It is, you know, but it is a human rights issue, the fact that we all, you know, are created equal, and we are all, you know, we stand under the Constitution and available to the same rights as everyone else.
I would argue it's also a legal issue. One of the things that, you know, we learned from the Civil Rights Generation is that separate but equal, apart from being morally unfair, it doesn't work legally.
Right.
It's never quite equal. One of the things that Thurgood Marshall, I think, brilliantly brought up to the Supreme Court in the several cases leading up to Brown versus Board of Education is that no matter how much you try to make separate but equal equal, it just doesn't work. You just can't give all those rights. And one of the reasons is that the federal law is based on the word marriage.
Right.
And states' recognition of other states is based on the word marriage. So even if D.C. were to offer everything to the citizens of D.C., if they were to move across the border to Virginia or Maryland, they wouldn't have the same rights as a straight couple. Terry, you haven't gotten in on this conversation. What are your thoughts?
I'm loud on the outside. Inside, I'll talk on the outside. Is my mic on? That doesn't sound like it to me,
but
I hope it
is. It is on.
Can you guys hear me? That's what's really important. All right. I'm wondering about the pushback. I mean, you mentioned Congress, and that's, to me, this country is so divided on the issue. The fact, you know, that Iowa and five, six other states, whatever, you know, have accepted it doesn't mean that Congress in any way at all is going to. Partially because of what Garland was talking about and the marriage term, which is not just a legal term, but it also for a lot of people obviously is a spiritual term and has a spiritual connection. So then you can get into a sort of a church and state kind of situation. But I would love to see this happen and love to see it happen nationwide, but I have dealt with, as all of us have here, with the religious right, which is it's like we're in sort of a lull right now, which is maybe why now is the best time. But I wonder how prepared you guys are, and women, you know, how you prepared you are for a huge pushback once it gets into the Congress and Congress's ears.
Jeff, are you prepared for pushback from Congress?
That's the big question. We're getting prepared. I mean, I think, you know, across the city, I think some of, even within the LGBT community, there has been division on that question. Are we ready? You know, obviously, you know, most within the LGBT community, majority, you know, are supportive and want, you know, equal rights. But the question is, can we fend off congressional intervention? Can we fend off a well-funded campaign, you know, from the right? And that's the question. We have a lot of work to do in the District of Columbia. And I think there is a grassroots campaign that is being built and is moving forward. Gertrude Stein Democratic Club is proud to be a part of that. Last night, our community forum was just was a launch for our members to have a discussion, but it was also the launch of what we see as a community-wide discussion. And we'll be moving forward within all 8 ward organizations in the District of Columbia over the next month and a half, having that intense discussion with local activists and citizens about marriage equality. But we do have a lot of work to do. We have a lot to do around coalition building. We have a lot of barriers to cross. As we know, you know, there hasn't been a lot of outreach done in African-American community and Latino community. And we have to begin to really build those coalitions and have some of that open, frank conversation. I mean, many do think that because the District of Columbia has been so supportive, you know, of the past, in the past, locally, when you look at the LGBT community.
And it's important to point out the most recent thing was passed unanimously, which is interesting. Every single one of the 15 members of the D.C. City Council.
Yeah, the 13. The 12, except for Marion Barry, because he wasn't present.
Oh, okay. All right.
But all 12 present voted unanimously. And made, you know, really strong comments that, you know, this was well overdue. So we hope that that level of support will continue from our elected officials. I know that, you know, we are waiting to see how Congress and if Congress responds and what happens. And that will sort of give us the clue as to how we move forward. But we are beginning to build, hopefully, you know, a citywide campaign and via starting discussions as we speak.
Let me follow up on that a little bit. Strategically, are you getting pushback from other lesbian and gay organizations around the country in other states? I mean, because, you know, what's happening if this goes through is it becomes a national issue.
It's already a national issue.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, really a national on this, as opposed to if you're struggling for it in Missouri.
You mean a federal issue.
Yeah. Okay.
I think there's some concern. We had a couple folks at the forum last night, and again, it was, you know, Mark facilitated a very open forum where, you know, quite a bit of different opinions were shared. There are some people that are concerned about what will the impact of this, because it is the District of Columbia, the nation's capital, be on the national agenda, and particularly the national LGBT agenda. When we look at, you know, when we look at ENDA, we look at hate crimes legislation. There's concern about that. To this point, there hasn't been a lot of open dialogue from national organizations and from some of the national partners about that. I think, you know, all eyes are on D.C. in many ways to see what happens and how this moves forward.
I want to bring up an issue with regard to Congress. All of you in this room know I used to work in Congress for Congressman Barney Frank, actually, and the House Judiciary Committee. And one of the things that I don't think a lot of people realize is that Congress is not an organization where a majority gets its way. I mean, people study in their textbooks a majority of the House and a majority of the Senate, and the president passes a law. Throw that out. That's not how it works. Let me tell you how it works if you don't know. In the House, the majority party sets the agenda. What that means is, and in fact, the Republicans did it too, unless they had a majority of Republicans on board, things didn't even get a vote.
Yep.
So it didn't matter whether you had 90% of Democrats and 40% of Republicans on board. When the Republicans were in charge, they didn't allow it to come to a vote. Nancy Pelosi, and it's not just her, there's others in the Democratic leadership, but it's primarily her, the Speaker of the House, has more power than anyone else there, and she basically decides the agenda. That doesn't mean that she doesn't listen to other people and take their views into consideration. Of course, Nancy Pelosi represents San Francisco, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, she has come out in favor of marriage equality, not specifically for D.C., but in general. Is that right?
My understanding of that is that she isn't, and even more important, you know, particularly in regards to the District of Columbia, she has come out being very vocal in regards to the District of Columbia having the right to, you know, to pass our own legislations and to have self-determination.
Right. So there's two answers here.
There's two issues.
One is the question of marriage equality. The other is whether the elected representatives of the District of Columbia should have the right to represent their people, or whether Congress is going to go in and overturn the will of the duly elected representative. So the point I wanted to make is that nothing gets through the House without Nancy Pelosi at least implicitly agreeing. There is one backdoor procedure, which we want to get into. We can, too. But basically, it's her choice. The Senate's a little bit more free. But the only way, again, correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, the only way that Congress could overturn the decision of the duly elected representatives of the District of Columbia, should they vote for marriage equality, is you would need a bill to pass the House, a bill to pass the Senate, and to be signed by President Obama. And if you don't get all three, it's not overturned. Is that right, Jeff?
That is my understanding. To overturn a law that's been passed and signed in the District of Columbia, but we know in the past what has been done in regards to the way of getting around that is to hit us with our budget. And to hold up our budget and and attach riders there. And so I think, as always, that's some of the major concern. Congress, our delegate to Congress, Eleanor Holmes Norton, hopefully soon to be Representative Norton, has said when, the council passed the vote for recognition of marriages from other jurisdictions, that she believes she can fight off, any influence. And we hope that will stand. Again, this will some way be a test ground and see how Congress responds.
And the case that's just happened now, D.C. recognizing other states' marriages, is sort of a test case. If Congress is okay with that, you think you can press forward more on marriage equality?
Some feel that way. Some feel that way, and some have said and discussed that, depending upon what happens with the voting rights legislation, that, if not now, when? We need to move forward. We cannot continue to wait. We can't continue to say that, D.C. deserves self-determination, and we're not willing to sort of fight for that right to pass our own, laws, and not willing to press the issue. So there are those that are out there that are saying now.
Go ahead, Carl.
A question I had is this. I don't know if you guys, I imagine you've looked into it, but as you know, there's some more issues regarding the voting rights coming before the Supreme Court. Regarding how Congress overseeing the Voting Rights Act under the 14th Amendment. But whatever the case, that's going to be, I believe, in April. It's coming before the Supreme Court. In any way, do you see any way where this will affect what's going on here?
That has been some concern. We don't think so. We don't think, particularly in regards to, the council's vote to recognize marriages from other jurisdictions. At this point, when you see what's been done, with the gun amendment, it's like, well, what else, can they do when you look at such a serious issue? So the belief is that that particular legislation will not, have the impact. But again, we don't know down the road. The reality is we don't know. And many are saying, well, if we don't move forward, we will never know. We have to begin to do the groundwork and to educate folks in the district and to mobilize people and to be prepared for whatever may come.
Now, this would not be dialogue if we didn't invite our listeners to say their two cents on this question. The number is 202-488-0- excuse me. Why did I say four?
588.
That's important. 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. If you have a view on whether D.C. should have marriage equality, are you for it? Are you against it? Do you think you're for it, but maybe now's not the right time? What is your view on D.C. marriage equality? Give us a call, and we will take your calls.
And while we wait, let me throw another question at you, Jeff. What is the reaction to this on the street, and particularly in the black community? And I mention that only because even talking about homosexuality on the air, particularly with black males, has been, almost verboten. It's very, very recent that this kind of conversation could even be held, which is showing some significant progress. Mm-hmm. But on the street, in the community itself, are you getting support as well?
The campaign is really sort of just launching and beginning, and we really think that we're looking forward to seeing the response in the community as we go across the city with these community discussions. But we know that there will be some pushback, and there is some reservation. But this is an opportunity for us to have a conversation about same-sex couples and LGBT people in general in the District of Columbia like we've never had. And we need to have it for a variety of reasons. Outside of marriage equality, there are a lot of issues. And you start talking about African-American community, we could go on a whole, we could have
about
a whole
the down
show.
Low for,
we
for
could
an
have
hour.
A whole show dedicated to that. Yeah. But we need to have this conversation. And so this issue, marriage equality, and this particular, legislation that was passed, from the council, recognized measure of the jurisdictions, has provided us with the opportunity to start to have that conversation. We know there's going to be some pushback. We know there's going to be some reservation. But regardless, we need to have the conversation.
Well, let me ask you just briefly on that point, because there's a lot of discussion about the down low in the African-American community, particularly gay men, it's usually referred to, who are pretending to be straight, who are trying to live straight lives, many of them having unprotected sex and increasing AIDS rates. Would marriage equality help in that regard?
Would marriage equality help in regard?
Would it help in regard to acceptance of homosexuality in the African American community, so that gay people feel free not to live closeted lives?
You know, that's a good question.
That's one of those theoretical questions.
Hopefully, we will find out. I think that hopefully, what this whole discussion and marriage equality being put sort of front and center will allow us to do is to have a conversation and begin to have a dialogue that makes people more comfortable with, to accept their sexuality and be willing to come out and live their lives. I think that's the biggest thing. I don't necessarily think that, because there is some division when we talk about marriage equality, and particularly, I had dinner with some friends a couple weeks ago, predominantly African American. And for a lot of folks, marriage equality isn't the number one issue on their list. They're supportive and they want their rights. But when you start talking about the litany of issues, that are there, whether it be healthcare, jobs, it's like, okay, we want to fight for it, but there's some other things there as well. So in that respect, I don't think necessarily that will have an impact on increasing African-American men, gay men coming out, the down low thing. But I do think that it creates the opportunity for us to start to have a conversation and folks to feel more comfortable with talking about sexuality in general and talking about, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender question, folks, that then may help deal with that issue and make people more comfortable and feel as there is a community for them.
Yeah. And the thing to keep in mind, I was with the ACLU for years, and we did a lot of different things regarding, religion and of course, sexual preference and all that kind of stuff. And one thing you find is traditionally the African American community is much more socially conservative than is perceived by most people, because they vote Democratic, they vote left, but they're very often, because of religion, you find the African American, do the numbers on the death penalty and things like that, and many times they're much more socially conservative than most people who watch political voters.
Than most Democrats would be, say.
Right. The other thing is, and I think I look at one thing a little bit differently, and that is that one thing that we were talking about was being able to talk about this issue and talking about this issue more. And I would say this, and this is from noticing what's going on with President Obama. What I've noticed is, as when an African American became president with a lot of serious issues, it was just the opposite. People stopped talking about race. Isn't it, in a way, what I think is better is when people stop talking about it, because there's no reason to talk about it. Clearly, if you look at the list of what would be considered left-wing issues over the past 200 years, the bottom line is this. Like every other left-wing issues, 50, 60 years later, people look back and say, can you believe we thought like that?
Right. Can you believe we had different water fountains? Can you believe that gay people weren't allowed to get married when straight people were?
Right. All of these issues, 50 years later, people, it's like Dennis Kucinich. Everybody always looks back and says, gee, he was right. We shouldn't have invaded Iraq. Those types of things.
Right.
So
right.
I think basically what I'm saying is, when you're not talking about it.
Let me go to a caller. When it's no longer an issue. We got a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller.
Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yes. I feel a little bit inspired to, expose or not expose, but to augment the scope of the conversation. I think that to look at this in terms of purely legally, as Mr. Levine was saying, that it's a matter, in my estimation, to be one of contract, one of probate, one of chancery, purely economic. It also has overtones that lend themselves to upward mobility and employability of gays versus the larger population, and one of pecuniary interest between two people or between two entities. I mean, especially with the fact that corporate personhood these days, of course, that's certainly tangential to the matter, but personhood.
Let me ask Jeff about the economic impact, because you raised pecuniary matters.
Sure, and if you don't mind if he does that, but I can make one more quick point about black gays versus white gays.
Okay, hold that thought for a second. Jeff, what is the economic impact of allowing gay couples to marry?
Last night we had the pleasure of having someone from the Williams Institute, which has done a study looking at the potential economic impact, and I'm not an economist, and I don't know it through and through, But, you know, potentially from just rough estimates, I mean, there looked like there to be, you know, a plus, you know, in regards to for the District of Columbia when you look at the potential of same-sex couples and particularly targeting those who, you know, regular tourists, you know, and they had some particular targeted states in the region who are likely to move to the district because of that. And you start looking at the folks who then, you know, looking at opportunities.
And
for
just marriage, you know, that brings in a lot of people. That's dance halls and flowers, and marriages are expensive things. But actually, in terms of the couples themselves, I think that marriage is a way out of poverty for a lot of people. And, you know, it's there's things like you get health care benefits from your employer,
well,
you get Social Security benefits, disability benefits.
Fact. It's a sociological fact. When marriage exists, or you know, whichever, gay or straight, there is a social stability that is undeniable, and that social stability leads to economic stability.
Caller, you had a point on black gays versus white gays.
Go ahead. I was thinking that you know, there's an economic disparity. I would think from one looking at it objectively and one looking at it subjectively, that there's a difference between blacks and whites. On the straight side of the fence, as well as on the gay side, and the fact that I think that to be black and gay poses a double indemnity, as opposed to being white and gay. I don't know what your position is on that.
Well, you may not know from listening to him, but Jeff Richardson is black and gay, and not that it's necessarily relevant, but since you raise it on your question.
Well, then you can answer my question.
Right, since you can't see him on the radio.
What's wrong with this broadcast?
Well, they can't see him.